podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation. Welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast as we continue on with our, not this year's Gone Fishing, but it's kind of our off-season review or kind of some summary of what was going on with some of these teams. And we're going to be talking about teams in the Eastern Conference this time that did not make the playoffs. Our theme this year is what's on your playlist. Going to try to find some songs for them to listen to as they kind of try to conjure up some magic, no pun intended, because one of the teams is the Magic, to try to get better in the offseason. I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich, and I am joined by Mr. Adam Murray. How you doing?
I am doing good. We're back to talking about bad basketball again.
Bad basketball? We're kind of, here's the problem, we're kind of watching bad basketball right now in the playoffs, right?
Well, this is a quite unwatchable. It's been, there's, you know, a lot of, it was expected.
The Cavs and the Warriors are doing, well, here's the funny thing. People are saying, well, the Cavs look like they've weakened. Like, can you believe the Cavs and the Raptors had the same record in the regular season?
It's just, the Raptors have absolutely nothing.
Like, they have no answers. And the Kyle Lowry's ankle injury, I mean, they were done anyway, but that really did them in.
Yeah, so you know? It was Cleveland done. Yeah, Cleveland was done, and that's why they said, well, this, we did the math, let's go through Indiana and Toronto, as opposed to having to get through, you know, the Washington-Atlanta winner and...
Yeah.
And a potential feisty Miami or Chicago team.
Yeah, and Chicago always gives them trouble, you know. So, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that LeBron was purposely trying to avoid Wade because he's friends with him, but, you know, it did seem kind of weird that they just somehow never play each other in the playoffs now. Even though they get so close to doing it, but it doesn't happen, you know.
That's a shame.
The other ones that are actually seem to have a little bit of like interest or suspense is Rocket Spurs, which, you know, as we're recording this is going to be going into game four today, and then game four of Washington Boston, which, you know, Adam obviously has a little bit of vested interest. I almost said vented interest.
Good old, like, Louisiana education system.
How do you vent interest? Like, you'd have, that's like a vent, like you'd have to like funnel it somewhere else, you know? Which in the case for Adam might wind up happening because the Celtics might actually get eliminated in that round. We'll see. You know,
yeah, I've said Wizards in six anyways.
Yeah.
You make it sound like you know, I'm just blindly cheering for Boston.
No, you're that's what I'm saying. You're an NBA realist. You're an NBA fan realist. Like, you never really get too much into the way of like being a Celtics fan or like cheering on the Celtics, even though that is the team of choice from where you were at. But well, you have a pretty good base of operations there.
It's just smart marking your way through it. You could just be like a blind Knicks fan, like, oh, we traded for Derrick Rose. He was an MVP. We're gonna be the champions now. Or it's like, well, I've seen enough of this team to know their weaknesses, and I could see how, you know, they could be easily exploited. And
yeah, well, for that in that lingo, this is gonna be the smart mark show, because this is gonna be like the episode where we do a little bit of come down for some of those fans of those teams, and we're gonna try to prop them up a little bit too with some, I guess, forward looking statements, as the stock market usually says for some of these teams. But I don't want to call all of them hopeless, but there's some here when I'm looking at them. I mean, like, which one did you feel like had a little bit more flair to it? Was it the off-season playlist teams, the teams that didn't make the playoffs in the West, or the ones in the East? Because I feel like the East is just the pits.
The East has more bottomed out, but I think they have more hope because they're already starting it. You have the West, you have teams in turmoil like New Orleans, you have teams that just started the rebuild like Sacramento. Whereas you have like Philly and Brooklyn, well, they already know what they're doing. They've already started their plans.
Yeah, Minnesota's sort of right in the middle of it, where they're in that crossroads of, okay, are we going to be a defensive team? Are we going to be an offensive team? Like, how are we going to get better? But they're sort of in a situation too where they're really young and they have cap space, but they do need to get better soon, or things are going to like dovetail. I mean, we're going to talk about a team that's sort of that position in the Eastern Conference for this episode too. I'll bring them up when we get to them, but we're not there yet. We're going to be doing this by alphabetical order by the name of the city. So the first one we're going to start with was the worst team in the NBA record-wise, I believe. That was the Brooklyn Nets, and that they finished at 20-62. The sad part is I think that they were going to do worse.
Well, that's what everybody said. Everybody's like they're going to challenge the 76ers with their
9-73. Yeah.
And it's like, no, they're you watch this team, they have heart, they have entered, they have fight in them. You have a smart front office. You have a smart coach. You know, you have your style. You just don't have the talent there yet. But you didn't sign terrible deals. And we could sort of go into it, be like, well, who did they want to sign, and how did that turn out, and were those players really good? And
well, they inherited a lot of really bad deals that they were still feeling the ramifications of, particularly the Billy King. Everybody knows it already, where they traded the 3 first-round draft picks, or right to swap, for Jason Terry, Kevin Garnett, and Paul Pierce. It was just one of the worst deals of all time.
You could still, it's only the worst deal of all time. I'm not, you know, saying it wasn't a terrible deal. It was only the worst deal because of this new money. What they did, they had to give 3 number one picks to get rid of those 3 years of Gerald Wallace's contract, where he was making $10 million. Mm-hmm. $10 million on a, you know, the salary cap was how much last year?
Well, last year it was right over 100, I believe.
And the year before that, it was way
better. It was like 73, yeah. So maybe in the 80s. But by 2013, it was in the 70s, you know.
If you have a player making $10 million of an $80 million cap, that kills your entire team. So they had to do it just to get out of his contract. Now, who would have known that every team would get this influx of money and every team is now completely rich and could go sign whomever they wanted?
Yeah, and then the short-term scenario of, oh, well, we made the playoffs in 2014. Yeah, but you got eliminated in the second round, and nobody remembered the team after that. And then everybody that you had gotten in that trade was either too old to be useful, or you traded them out anyway. It was just bad all around. But you talked about the new GM, which is Sean Marks, kind of from the Spurs R.C. Buford family tree. And then there's the new head coach, Kenny Atkinson, who was an assistant with the Atlanta Hawks. And so what they did this year is that they really picked up the pace. They were like the fastest paced team in the NBA. No experience at all. They were 28th in experience, but they took a lot of threes. They were 5th in the league in 3-pointers made. Brooke Lopez had by far his best offensive season in his career. I don't know if he became a better player. I guess just because of the expansion of his role as like a key offensive player just made it look like he was, you know, having a career year. Would you say that Lopez had a career year?
They let him shoot threes now.
Yeah, but did he have a better overall year? Like, he did get 1.7 blocks per game, you know, so I know there's a lot of highlights of Lopez getting posterized, you know, because of the fact that, you know, Brooklyn was so wide open in their spacing, but I don't know how good of a year Lopez truly had.
He had a very good year because, you know, I don't want to say he's shook the injury bug, but he's statistically, you know, he was, if he didn't lead, you know, have career best, he was right there. And, you know, like I said, you go from, he took like something like what, 40 or 50 3-pointers in his career. All of a sudden, then that goes to
something. That goes through the roof. Yeah, to like two, like close to two per game. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, well, how do you go from not shooting at all that all of a sudden now you're just sitting at the 3-point line? It's like, well, that's smart adaptability of the game. And, you know, like we said, they didn't give out stupid contracts to people. And, you know, the people they signed, which is sort of a, not a good precursor, but the fact that all the teams wanted their players back means, well, they were picking the right players as opposed to, you know, hey, Evan Turner, we'll give you $90 million. Evan Turner goes back to Danny Ainge, and Ainge's like, nope, 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 bye.
Yeah, I mean, they did try to get Alan Crabb. I mean, if they had gotten Crabb, I think that actually would have worked out for them, because by the time we got to the life of that contract, you know, the contract probably would have been up by the time Brooklyn got pretty good anyway, if they made the right steps in improving their roster and regaining those draft picks. But, you know, they that was matched by Portland. That was Portland's quote-unquote mistake. They did bring in Trevor Booker. Trevor Booker had a good year. I kind of consider him one of the more underrated players, and not like the kind that's always called underrated to the point that they're overrated, but I really think he truly is an underrated player.
He was he played well. Jeremy Lin, when he got back to being healthy, played well mm-hmm. for the team. Caris LeVert seems like he could be a good player.
Yeah, Isaiah Whitehead gave him a little bit of decent playing time too. Rondae Hollis Jefferson, you and I talk about him all the time. We think he's kind of a little bit of a multifaceted player. The problem is offensively, he's so bad. Like, I don't think he'll ever be Adam. I don't even think. Even in his prime, he'll get past maybe 12 points a game. He's sort of a Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, if that's a fair way of putting it.
You need that wing defender, and if he could just be that guy,
yeah,
that's a good thing. It's just the problem is this team just has too many guards. They've embraced small ball to too much of a new level, and you know we mentioned all the players that are doing well: Lin, LeVert, Whitehead, Sean Kilpatrick. They're all twos.
Yeah.
So you can't really do anything if you have Brook Lopez and assorted twos. It's like Villanova.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is, you know, now, which it's been overshadowed by things, but Brook Lopez is not going to re-sign with this team after next year.
Yeah, his contract comes up at 2018 where he will be an unrestricted free agent. Lin has a player option. Booker's contract also ends next summer. Then they have a bunch of non-guarantees for this summer. Like, we could talk – I mean, that's for summer 2018. For this summer, the ones that really are to keep an eye on, Randy Foy, who you remember when he had that game-winning shot in the middle of the season? Like, and that – he only averaged, like, 5 points and 2 assists. It's not like he was, like, a super-duper player, like, sub-guy for them. But, you know, it's just the fact that he's out there in the market. They have a team option on KJ McDaniels. I would expect that they will pick it up. Then they have a bunch of non-guaranteed contracts with guys like RG Goodwin, Spencer Dinwiddie, Quincy Acey, Joe Harris. I mean, we'll see what happens with that. I would suspect that Kilpatrick, who's also got a non-guaranteed, I got a feeling that they're going to come to some kind of a deal. I'm not sure what the ramifications of that deal will be. How much do you think he would be worth?
Oh, he's just on a veteran minimum team option, I think.
Yeah, so they can pick it up, but I got a feeling
it'll just be a $1.5 million probably, and they'll obviously pick that up. That would be stupid not to, but just like you mentioned, Archie Goodwin, KJ McDaniels, they're just small players. They need to get bigger. They need, you know, they don't need, you know, big slow centers, but you need, they have nobody who's really a pure small forward on that
and
team.
And they have fluidity there with the roster of having to change things because they don't really have a true identity. They did decide to go fast this year, but, you know, remember Philadelphia did that too when the Hinky Tankathon began. Like, they decided to go really, really fast when Michael Carter-Williams was the point guard and take a lot of threes, and they kind of, like, curtailed that a little bit, like, after year two and year three. So just because they played really fast this year under Kenny Atkinson doesn't necessarily mean that's going to iron out to what they want to do. You know, they might do something completely different, you know, in year two if they pick up a good draft pick somewhere along the way. I do think they picked up some kind of draft pick. Was it Washington's?
Yeah, Washington's draft pick.
And from the Bojan Bogdanović trade.
Yeah, they got Washington and Boston, so they have two mid-20s.
The one downside of that was that in that trade, they did have to pick up Andrew Nicholson, who has guaranteed money through 2020. Now, it's not exactly crippling money. It's at $6 to $7 million a year ascending.
That's just
that he's a bad player and he's on your books for 4 years. That's
big man insurance, and, you know, he's just going to sit at the end of the bench in case somebody, you know, you need a big body in there. And, you know, it's we sort of were surprised because he had a good rookie year and then just sort of went downhill from there.
Yeah, that was in Orlando where no one really knew. Remember when Mo Harkless was there at the same time as Nicholson, Kyle Quinn was there. And, I mean, I don't know about Kyle Quinn. We're going to talk about the Knicks later. But, like, you know, it kind of sort of worked out for Harkless. But we didn't really know who was the good one, you know, among the three that were in that front court for Orlando. But Orlando's. let's talk about the Nets here. So like offensive efficiency 27th, even though they took all those threes, they were 11th in rebounding. Like, do you put a lot of that in Booker being a pretty good power forward alongside Lopez, who was only a 5 rebound per game guy, or is there something to that that they can build on?
No, it has to come from pace. Of course, you're going to be the highest in rebounding is if you're just going down, 5 seconds and shooting it immediately.
Yeah, you'll get at least 10. I mean, if you get to 10 offensive rebounds per game as a team, you're doing okay. You know, so, and I would have to assume that that's what happened with Brooklyn. Outside of that, I mean, they get to the free throw line a pretty good amount, but outside of that, all their numbers are the dregs. Their defense was garbage. 29th in points allowed, 23rd in defensive efficiency. They don't get a lot of steals. They turn the ball over a ton. Not a lot of assists, especially with Lynn being out for so long throughout the season. There's so many places for the improvement, but let's just go ahead and get to the song. What song for the playlist would you have this summer for the Brooklyn Nets?
I had them with a very unexciting audiobook of Moneyball.
Only Adam Murray could. I give him like the job of please find me a song for this team, and you find an audiobook.
Because the worst thing they could do is sign more bad contracts. So you find the players, you know, that could fit your system that aren't going to cost you an arm and a leg. Okay, fine. If you want a real song, we'll go with Center Field by John Fogerty, because that's basically just their attitude is, put me in, coach. I'm ready to play. I don't have any experience. I'm straight from the D League. I've bounced around all the places. Oh, I'm ready. And, you know, they're basically... You know, I still have them, and I said this even the beginning, the middle of the season is I'm assuming they're banking on Giles falling to them, and they're going to put all their stock in him.
They're going to put all their stock in a man who's torn his ACL twice.
But because if he could stay healthy, he would have been a top five pick.
Oh, because of the placement with the Washington pick. Yeah, well, remember, they kind of had to maneuver their way to get – they had to give up – I believe it was Thaddeus Young, right, where they had to get that draft pick to
Thaddeus
get LeVert.
Thaddeus Young, they could have Thaddeus
but
Young
they,
got them
but they traded,
LeVert. Yeah, you're correct.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. They traded him to Indiana to get the draft pick so that they could get LeVert. So they had to give up something. You know.
So they did that knowing Young isn't going to give them anything. So LeVert, like we said, you know, they invest on the let's take injured people. They tried it 2 years ago with McCullough. He sort of flopped out miserably and was relegated to he was part of the trade to Washington. And then Washington immediately sent him down to the D League and he's nowhere to be found there. They did it with LeVert, so they're just going to take, it seems like they're just going to take injured people. They're not doing the San Antonio, let's take Euros. They're taking the reclamation projects.
What audiobook was it? Did you mention
Moneyball.
It already? Moneyball. Let me ask you this. Do you think Moneyball is the movie is good? I kind of go back and forth on it all the time.
I never saw the movie, but it's hard to dramatize a team.
Brad Pitt plays Billy Bean.
You do realize Oakland just went from being really terrible to just mediocre. It's not like they won championships.
Yes. Yes. Well, the running gag I remember of Moneyball is that the Billy Bean character in the movie is like absolutely obsessed with getting Scott Hatterberg on the field because he feels like Hatterberg's like sabermetrics that him and Jonah Hill's character conjure up like automatically make the team better. You know, and I just always so who would be the Nets Hatterberg? Who's the Hatterberg of the situation? Like, who's the one that just seems to need to get more playing time on the court in order to make him better? Would it be Hollis Jefferson? Would it be Kilpatrick?
It would be Jeremy Lin.
Jeremy Lin.
It would be. We have to get Jeremy Lin back on. We need
him. We need
he's
Jeremy
the
Lin.
Face of the franchise, and we need him.
I Will Wait by Mumford & Sons. Because I feel like we're in a situation, even with the fan base, where you really have no choice but to wait another year or two. Like, it's almost like – I wouldn't call it an expansion team, but it's close.
Yeah. And then we'll pair our two things together. Yes, you'll wait, but just don't fools rush in.
Okay. That's another song, huh?
UB40. Isn't that,
It's, I remember that. Let's talk about the Charlotte Hornets. That's one where you still tooting yours. Are you still tooting your horn that you got that one right still to this day?
This team is a mess.
Okay.
I'm just going to take the high road, and the record will reflect that you said I was correct, not me.
Well, you had, when we did the previews of the season, you kept contending that Charlotte does not belong in that, like, that automatic playoff tier. And I said, well, that's crazy, but I'll let you put them in the non-playoff tier, but you're going to have to give a really good reason why and die on that hill if you're wrong. You know, but it turned out you were right.
Yeah, and you just look at this roster. The roster was not built for anything. You're relying on, you know, Marvin Williams and his, you know, his legs to keep up. You lose all the bench in Al Jefferson, and you don't really recap it. If you're relying on Zeller to be sort of the cornerstone and savior of your team, you're sort of in trouble. And you spent a ton of money sort of assembling this thing, who this team is only going to – they can only cap out at like a six seed.
It's kind of in a similar situation to what happened with Portland, but in this way, is that they made the playoffs last year. They went seven games with the Miami Heat and lost. And then they had a lot of guys whose either their contracts were coming up and they had to consider resigning them or letting them go, or, you know, or to cut bait and kind of make some changes. And they did make a few changes. There were, like, I think Jeremy Lin was one that was gone. Courtney Lee went to the Knicks. But they did re-sign Nick Batum. They did re-sign Marvin Williams, who had one of the best years of his career that previous year. They brought in Marco Bellinelli, who, despite the 10 points per game, had a really bad year, and he's like 30 years old, so he's on the downside already. They re-signed Cody Zeller, you know, off of an extension as his rookie contract was nearing, around $13 million a year. Zeller is a guy that a lot of people feel is very valuable to the team, despite the numbers, the raw numbers not saying so. Do you buy into that with Zeller?
Compared to who else is on the team, yes, by default, he's the only real low post presence they have. Because
Kaminsky is not a post guy, which is ironic because that's all he was in Wisconsin. He was a post guy. Now he's a 3-point shooter.
Well, it's college. You can get away with it. College just being marginally better than everybody else makes you
a stud. Yeah, there. Exactly.
So, like I said, they spent a ton of money to assemble this team. They have zero wiggle room to do anything. And then
Ramon Sessions' injury hurt them a lot too.
Yes,
you know, I'm not saying he was I'm not saying he was a great player, but it put a lot of pressure on Kemba Walker, who did have an all-star season, to really have to deliver. He was at 23 points per game, along with 5 assists, 3-pointers made, and 3-point percentage were in the top 50. So he was had a really, really good year. But Batum kind of slipped back a little bit. Would you agree?
Don't forget, Gilchrist was out last year, you know, the year before, so he took him over, and he's not a shooter. Gilchrist isn't a shooter, so there's no shooter in the front court, you know, and you're relying as sort of Marvin Williams to be your you know, spot up shooter. That's
and Bellinelli, who, like I already said,
Bellinelli was just the bench, and you know, you signed Jeremy Lamb, you know, against nobody. You paid him $8 million because I guess because you had the money. And then the problem, I think, really just compounded everything is they really, you know, a lot of these GMs seem to trust, you know, the old, you know, the meme, just, you know, hold my beer. Oh,
yes.
That was stupid. Oh, hold my beer. Let's trade for Miles Plumlee and all his contracts. Like, first, like,
yeah.
Why was Miles Plumlee signed to that, you know, his contract?
When Milwaukee signed the deal, like, I didn't know if it, like, we always talk about it from Danny LaRue, the nay test, a tradable contract. Like, how tradable is a contract immediately after you sign it? I didn't think Miles Plumlee passed the nay test. I didn't think Milwaukee would be able to trade it. And bing, bang, boom, Charlotte takes it in exchange for basically nothing, because it was Roy Hibbert who the Bucks let go. It was just...
Hibbert let go, and they had 2 years of Spencer Hawes.
Yes, and that's fine. I think they can deal with Spencer Hawes for 2 years.
So you have Plumlee, who is not that good of a player, and he's making a ton of money, and just, you killed all flexibility. You're not going to get a good draft pick, so you can't build through the draft. You can't bring in free agents. You can't trade away any. Your assets aren't really high value. Who's gonna Who's gonna break the bank for, you know, Kemba Walker's off the market. Nobody's gonna trade for, you know, Marvin Williams or, you know, Kaminsky. They're sort of forced to keep because, you know, that's sort of it would just be a colossal failure to trade him after, you know, you were offered four picks for him.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, though, with the kind of being forced to have stability, because Kemba Walker, Batum, Kaminsky, Williams, Zeller, Lamb, and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, Jeremy Lamb, having a lot – he's always had a rocky relationship with the head coach, Steve Clifford, in terms of playing time. All those guys are signed through at least 2019. The only one who's not signed through 2018 is Marco Bellinelli. Their free agency is not very sexy. Like, Ramon Sessions has a player option at $6 million. I would think because he's in his 30s and that he's coming off of an injury, he'll probably pick that up. You know, and then there's the unrestricted free agents in Brian Roberts. They declined the team option already on Christian Wood. Travion Graham, we'll see. They already cut Aaron Harrison and Mike Toby. So there's not really a lot there in terms of stability. That's why my song that I picked was Stuck in the Middle with You, the old, I guess, 70s rock hit from Steelers Wheel. What was yours?
I went with Skilo, I Wish, because this team wishes it were good. And, you know,
you wish you were a little bit taller. I wish it was a little taller.
Was supposed to be a GM mastermind, wasn't he?
Well, he did swing a couple of deals that helped lead to the two playoff appearances in 2014 and 2016. You know, I mean, particularly trading, you know, drafting Kemba and not biting the bait on like guys like Jimmer Fredette after Kyrie Irving was picked at number one. So they made a good pick there. I'm trying to think of a couple of other – well, you know, the one with Kidd-Gilchrist at number two, that one probably came back to get him. Was Rick Cho the GM at the time in 2012 when they were, like, literally the worst team in the NBA when they were still the Bobcats?
I don't know, but it's one of those things with – when you have expectations, it's a lot different than just floating through and –
Yeah, Zeller at number four. I don't remember how Marvin Williams wound up on the team. I wish I had a better memory than that. Drafting Kaminsky, it was kind of like in the lower part of the lottery. I can't really blame him for that one either. You know, it's all kind of like the Charlotte Hornets since about 2014. They've always been in a situation where they're okay, they're middle of the pack, but they're never able to get that really, really high draft pick. And when they did have the high draft pick, like I mentioned, the picks that they made were Walker, Kidd-Gilchrist, and Zeller. So it's not like you got, outside of Walker, like a difference maker. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's the thing. It just comes down to scouting, and you make bad draft picks. And Marvin Williams just signed as a free agent from Utah when Utah decided to blow things up in 2014.
Okay, that makes sense then. Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, you're stuck with him, and you're stuck with all these players, and, you know, like we said, Marvin Williams making, you know, he has four more years of him.
Okay, but if you're stuck in the middle, you know, here I am. What do they do with the when it comes to trading, if they really want to make a move? Because every team makes a move in the summer. What do you do if you're Charlotte? If you get the itch, like, can you move Batum's contract at $22 to $25 million a year? Can you move Kaminsky maybe if you give up on him because he's still on the rookie deal and maybe somebody wants to stretch five? Like, what can they really do?
You have to offer – you have to put in Gilchrist with somebody, or you have to just – overpay on the
That's
trade.
A good one. That's a good one. I think Kidd-Gilchrist at the $13 million per year range until 2019 with his player option. I think that's a movable deal. I think that passes the test. Everyone knows the internet memes are everywhere about Kidd-Gilchrist's ugly, ugly jump shot that he'll never master. But defensively, he's not bad, and he's 23 years old. He's a young guy. So you can move him. Jeremy Lamb, I would have to think, is done. Like, I think they'll find a way to move him.
It's kind of hard when they gave him $8 million just to be, you know, fighting with Bellinelli for bench minutes.
The only thing they excelled in team stats-wise, which is why I didn't mention anything about it, was, like, free throws made and free throw percentage and assists, which is really kind of their bread and butter under Steve Clifford. But everything else, like points allowed, blocks, defensive and offensive efficiency, three-point percentage, pace, all middle of the pack to kind of, like, whatever. Like, it's a very meh team, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, any kind of parting words before we move on to the next one about Charlotte?
they have, you know, they have problems a team who lost in the first round of the playoffs should have. And it's not a good look for them right now.
Yeah, and it's just, it's like, it's weird though, because when teams that are like that are bad, and we're going to talk about another one of them in a second, even though this team has a little bit more flexibility with their contracts, is that Charlotte just has no flexibility. Like, they have to, it's not necessarily cap space, it's just the life of the contract. Like, they got all these guys signed through for like another 2 or 3 years. Like, if you want to move them and you want to make a get, you've got to be really creative. You got to package a trade so that you can get a higher draft pick if you really fall in love with a guy in the draft, or make a signing that can nudge out one of those other guys, maybe get another backup point guard, a good one this time, not a Ramon Sessions. No offense to Ramon Sessions. But
Well, the good thing for them is this draft is so stacked with point guards, and the free agency is so stacked with point guards, every team that needs one should easily, the market's going to drop off dramatically for some of these players who will, you know, deserve better.
Very short aside, would you buy a $490 shoe? Pair of shoes.
They sold a whopping 300 in their first day.
are you joking or
no? Darren,
because whopping means like 15,000, right?
For as much as everybody gives shit for Darren Revell and his stuff, he actually did the math based upon orders and order numbers, and it turns out only like 300 people bought something from his store on launch day. So.
To put the context in it, we're talking about Lonzo Ball, his dad. They couldn't come to a deal with Nike or Adidas or Reebok. They basically walked out of the deal. So they made their own shoe for Lonzo Ball, who's very likely to be either number one or number two in the draft. Top point guard from UCLA, one and done guy. And they made a shoe. Don't remember the exact name of the shoe. I'm going to have to look it up for you. But $495 price point. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the, you know, it's you gave up, you know, guaranteed $4 or $5 million for, you know, for your, it's just, his dad's going to be a distraction, and hopefully
he already is.
Well, the middle kid's garbage, supposedly, right? He's not that good.
Is that the kind of like the little oversized one? Like, the oversized one is kind of the worst one. LaMelo is the one that had the 90-point game.
Yeah, he's supposed to be really good. So hopefully the dad just focuses on that and just, you know, because it's going to be one of those distractions. And if the kid, you know, the kid has, as long as it's a bad game, it's going to be, people are just going to be on him more than they need to because his dad doesn't know how to shut up. And it's...
Well, the name of the shoe is ZO2. I like LeVar only because I want to see how badly it goes for him when he fails. That's really why I like him.
LeVar is sort
the
of
story.
The
I like the story. You know,
he's sort of the problem with everything because that's the reason ESPN fired all their, you know, real journalists, because people would rather see Stephen A. Smith and people like LeVar Ball just shout for hours and say stupid shit.
There's a great gif out there of him doing like the swag walk onto the set on First Take. I'm going to have to send it to you like privately, but it's great stuff. LeVar Ball is a treasure. He's a treasure. I think Lonzo can handle it because he's really good. I feel bad for the other two kids. Like, that's the ones where you're going to hear that for the rest of your life. You know, you don't want to be Sebastian Telfair. Like, you don't want to be the super overrated guy that.
And that's what's going to happen because the odds are against them starting, you know, rookies, they hit the wall, they start slow. Being a point guard is not the easiest thing to, you know, start off in the NBA being good at.
Yeah.
So I want to go to L.A. Well, L.A. is probably going to still suck for a while. And
yeah. Now, Charlotte, for the context of this discussion for this team, I don't think they're in the running to get that guy. Like, I think they're going to have to settle for one of those lesser ones. Like, no, I would say lesser only based on draft stock, like Dennis Smith and who's another one missing.
Do you want to give a lottery pick to a backup point guard when you have Kemba Walker? Or don't you have a lot of other pressing needs you could do?
Yeah, but it's such an NBA move of like, oh, we need to stack our point guard position so that we can guarantee that we're always going to be good at that position no matter what, even though we have all these needs elsewhere. It's such an NBA GM move, you know what I'm saying? You know,
yeah, you could say it's the best player available, but if your main problem is, you know, you need size and you need a big body, the last thing you could possibly do is go for another point guard. Like, you know, we'll get to this in the NBA draft preview, but they need like a Zach Collins.
All right, let's move on to the Detroit Pistons.
You're just not buying it.
Yeah, I had to move on from this one. I love the balls, but we'll get them with the draft evaluation. For the Detroit Pistons, they do have a little bit more flexibility with their cap, but let's just start from the top. They had made the playoffs and got the last seed in the East, got swept by the Cleveland Cavaliers. Things looked a little bit okay for them, you know, but they had to play the beginning of the season without Reggie Jackson. When Jackson did come back from his knee surgery, he was really out of it. He didn't play well at all. I wouldn't call they're not career lows, you know, compared to his rookie season, but like 14 points, five assists, two rebounds, pretty bad, you know, through 52 games in the season. They struggled throughout. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope had some, almost call him Kentavious Caldwell-Poop. He doesn't play like poop, though. I'd say he's a good player, but he's going into restricted free agency, but he had some injuries that, you know, off and on. He wasn't always in lineup. Andre Drummond, who got paid like a superstar, doesn't always play like one on the offensive side of the ball. So a lot of issues there. They were fighting to get that last spot in the East. They fell short. They wound up being 37-45. A lot of murmurs that Stan Van Gundy, who's not only the head coach but the team president, was going to be in hot water to get fired. It turned out not to be the case. They're also closing the doors on the Palace of Auburn Hills, so they're opening a new arena. A lot of things going on here with Detroit, even though it's kind of a blasé team. So just kind of give me your summary of the Pistons season.
Well, okay, number one, weren't you in love with Stanley Johnson?
I am. I think he's a good player.
He just fell off the...
The reason why is because I had him pegged as like the strong, oversized guard who can make threes. And it didn't really constitute in his second season. It just didn't show up.
He went just into the doghouse and just did not come out at all. And this you know, this Stan Van 3000 project of his, we, you know, we would always be like, okay, let's give him the benefit of the doubt. He seems to be this, you know, wizard who makes these weird signings that don't make sense. You know, like he signed Boban because he knew Aaron Baines will opt out in a year. So it's just like, well, I'll buy somebody a year early.
He did have one 19-rebound game. I'll say that.
That doesn't make sense, but yeah. All right, we'll give you the benefit of the doubt. And just his moves got weirder and weirder. And why did John Luehr get a big contract?
That's the one that had people scratching their heads. That was the, like... You know how some people, like the casual readers or the casual, like, people that just follow the NBA, you say, you see, this guy makes this much money. This doesn't make sense. And the guy that they always use as that example last summer with all the spending going on was John Luehr. How does he get $10 million a year? He's not even good. You know, like, I don't want to say John Luehr's a bad player. He's a passable player. You know, he's a guy that you just see in every assembly line of the NBA training camp. Like, you could have gotten him for nothing.
He could have just been a $3 million, you know, really just, yeah, just like you said, a passable player, just pass over. And I actually didn't know he played for Phoenix 2 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I remember he was with Memphis, too. Yeah, he was originally, I believe, with Milwaukee. With Reggie Bullock, they wound up relying on him too much, you know, because of the fact that they had the issues with Reggie Jackson's injuries, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope being. What do you think of KCP? Like, what is your feeling on him now? He's at the point now where he's going to hit restricted free agency, and offer sheet is going to wind up coming to him. But like, what's he worth? How valuable is he to the core of the team?
Well, the way the ownership is talking, apparently he is your franchise player.
Okay, so if the offer sheet rises up to like 100, like say 5 for 100, would you think they'll still match it?
If they claim they're going to match it, you know, they have no reason to believe they wouldn't do that. For
okay.
Yeah, he's a good player. It's just, I don't know. Can let's just put it this way: can we blame Van Gundy, or do we blame Reggie Jackson for, it's not his fault he didn't come back from the injury. It's just sort of one of those unfortunate things because not everybody can bounce back. Did this team sort of crap out because he couldn't come back and what they thought the team would be, it couldn't, and they just didn't have a backup plan?
I think the blame is shared between Van Gundy and Drummond, because we know this, that Van Gundy has always had tumultuous relationships with his star centers. And it is kind of ironic that all the time Van Gundy winds up coaching these teams that have like stud, like really strong big guys. Like he had Shaq in Miami, and then he had Dwight Howard in Orlando. And it just seems like even though Drummond is in for the long haul, because he signed that big extension last summer, he's going to be there at least until 2020. It seems like Drummond has not really picked up on the offensive side of the ball. He's not becoming like that, the go-to guy. Rebounding-wise, he's great. Defensively, I think he's a little better than he used to be. Defensively, we talked about this. He was bad. He was a bad center. You know, that's what made him so, like, that's what made it so frustrating to watch, is that he was bad on both sides of the court, but you knew that he had the talent. You know, I just wish that Drummond could sort of rise to the occasion to where he could like average like 18 to 20 points per game, really expand. When you have to rely on Tobias Harris as your leading scorer, that's not good. You know, the other thing is too, you know, Stan's got a young team still. Like, their oldest player on their starting lineup is Marcus Morris, and he's 27 years old. You know?
Yeah, and I think he might be the odd man out because...
But he's got a great contract. Like, it's only good in that you can trade it to anybody without penalty. But if Marcus Morris is still a good player in the next two seasons, it's a bad deal.
He's a good player. It's just, does he fit in? Like, you look at this roster and what it could be. He seems to just be the...
Let me ask you this. How did Markieff fit so well with Washington, but Marcus didn't in Detroit? I know it's different teams and different climates, but what do you think it is?
It's the players around him. If you have Tobias Harris, who's a tweener, what is he? Is he the three? Is he the four? You have Andre Drummond. As opposed to Washington, you have Otto Porter. He is not going to play.
Yeah, and Gortat. And Gortat, who's your statue center.
He's not going out at all. It's just you have... You know, then you have, like I said, Luer and their draft pick, Henry Ellenson, and you have sort of just these different type of players, and I don't know. So with this, I think I picked a fitting song.
Okay.
And that would be the theme to Scooby-Doo, because we have a big mystery with this team.
So it's a mystery machine. So, who was the Lilith Fair artist girl that in the 90s that did Building a Mystery? Which one was that?
I think
that old 90s song Building a Mystery in that case.
I will defer Lilith Fair knowledge to you, apparently.
Well, you could do that. You could do the old, if we're doing cartoon themes, you could do Sylvester and Tweety's Mysteries, if you remember that one. Mm-hmm. Now I'm just thinking of anything that has the word mystery in it. But what's the mystery of Detroit? Like, how do they solve it?
I don't know. They have a personnel problem. If Jackson can't come back and you're playing with Ish Smith and your bench is sort of, you're good at home and you're terrible on the road, and this is this Jekyll and Hyde team.
New arena, so you got a little bit of like a little bit of urgency there, of where it's like you got to get better somehow. You can't just drop a turd, you know, in your first 2 months of opening the new arena kind of thing. So that's always wavering on your mind.
And speaking of turds, let's just move to the New York Knicks.
Well, I'll just finish Detroit with this, which shocked me, is that they had 37 wins, which sounds okay. It's like it's decent, but they were bad at everything but points allowed and rebounding. They were bad at everything. Like, so that means to me their offense is just – that's where it's at. Like, you talk about the identity of a team and what they're good at. Their offense has to get better, and I don't know where that starts with. Either you force Andre Drummond to work on mid-range and try to get better, or you try to trade one of those pieces like Morris or Tobias Harris, and you just try to get a good scoring guard, someone who can really, like, punch it in. So you want to talk about the Knicks now? We skipped Miami though.
Well, I made a good point. I made a nice segue, and then you decided.
And then
I
stopped.
So now,
yeah, so we could go back.
We can just go back to Miami.
Well, I'll try to find you a more decent segue for New York. You know, anything involving poop, you're ready to talk about the Knicks, huh? I'll just have to find some way to say poop in the Heat one. Miami, you're a fan of Miami. You like how Eric Spoelstra kind of always seems to pull off these high wire acts with just trying to scratch out the season.
It's the Miami Sky Force. They're just half their roster at the end of the year is just D-League players. Every year, it's just who is this person? And the difference between them and Memphis, who had to, last year had to have so many players, is these guys are actually, somehow play hard for Spoelstra.
And, and let it be known that that Sioux Falls is a very good D-League team. I know it means nothing in this conversation, but you can keep going.
They have a new arena as well. They built it like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
They actually built two arenas in that city. Very.
Yeah. Did you hear that the Pelicans, like, it's coming down to like Baton Rouge and Slidell?
It should have been Biloxi.
That's one of the other ones that they were considering. I don't know if they've really hammered it out yet. If they go to Slidell, I'd go to every game. I swear to you, I'll go to every game.
There's no, like, market. There's no people. Like, LSU has pretty much shown there's no market in Baton Rouge.
Yeah. But the Sky Force, they won the D-League title. A lot of the guys that had been from the D-League title team in 2016, that they were the ones that sort of had to pick up some of the slack guys like Rodney Magruder, Akora White. They did pick up Wayne Ellington in free agency. There's a lot of other backdrop there to where Dwayne Wade departed in free agency after they had re-signed Hassan Whiteside. When they figured out Wade wasn't back in the fold, they sort of had to scramble to get some signings just to fill the roster. Guys like James Johnson, Deion Waiters, who was dumped by the Thunder. They did an arenas provision deal with Tyler Johnson to try to explain the arenas provision deal. It's basically when you're a restricted free agent who was originally a second-round pick, so they can give you a contract where it's light on the front end, but then it becomes a balloon payment on the back end. So Johnson's salary jumps from like $6 million next season to $18+ million in 2018. Now, do you think this is sort of like a ticking time bomb for Miami, or do you like Johnson?
He's decent, but when he gets to be the $18 million, it's going to be kind of a killer for them.
So you don't like it? You think it's a time bomb?
It is a time bomb because he's not going to take that leap into an $18 million range.
He's got some nice moves, though. Like, you'll see him kind of cross over a guy. He's got some decent offensive.
Yeah, he has that scrappy second unit energy type thing. But
yeah, like Lowry was when he was coming up. You know,
it's just one of those things where you can't spend big now knowing that you have to set aside $10 million for him. So that's $10 million you don't have this year.
However, that is balanced out by the scenario that Chris Bosch will get they'll be able to get a medical waiver for Chris Bosch's max salary. He's at age 33, blood clots in the lungs, probably not going to be picked up by anybody between the life of the contract.
Well, you never know. There could be. There's a lot of.
He's trying. Things. You know, he was doing studio shows in the regular season, and he still wants to play, but it just doesn't seem like anyone's biting yet. And I need somebody to pick him up so that my expansion team that we did last summer can really like get a marked improvement. But give me your chances of Bosch playing again.
It's one of those I don't know, and I don't want to speculate because if the doctors are saying no, then you sort of hope he listens and you don't have sort of we have a NBA death collapse on court because.
Yeah, and his prime has passed. Once you hit age 34, which he'll be in about a year, you're done. Like, I don't want to say you're done, but, like, you're really knocking on the door of being over the hill, you know?
He could still be functional. It's not, you need to be a superstar and put up 20 and 10 again.
Yeah.
It's just one of those, like, yeah, we get it, you want to play, but. If the doctors are saying they're not saying it because if independent doctors are saying it, the ones that you hired as opposed to the Heat, where it's like, well, I don't really know if I trust them because they just want the cap money back.
Miami went 41-41. They missed the playoffs by one game. Spoelstra had an emotional press conference when they realized they weren't going to make the playoffs, about how this was one of his favorite teams because they fought so hard and they just came up short. Who was like the? It felt like they had a lot of heroes this season, even though they didn't really accomplish anything playoff wise. But who was like the biggest hero to you for Miami? Was it Goran Dragic, who really picked up steam in the second half of the season? Hassan Whiteside, who's getting better offensively, and he's still like a rebounding machine at 14 rebounds and 2 blocks a game? Or Dion Waiters, who just had that really crazy stretch in the middle of the year where he was player of the week and he was just drilling shots? Or even James Johnson, who might make himself some money at age 30, coming off the bench, you know, a sixth man of the year candidate. Like, who was the guy that you really like pinned on for Miami? Well,
that's the thing, is there was just always every week there was a different player, and I would personally say it was Whiteside, because it was all the, well, do we give him that $100 million contract? What if he just phones it in? We don't know. And then he's one of those people who have played up to his contract.
Yeah. And he's the staple of like a very strong defensive team. That's the one thing that Spoelstra, you'll always bank on. Always good defensive teams. Always. Like, and their 3-point shooting got much better. I give a little bit of credit there to guys like Wayne Ellington, even Luke Babbitt. Luke Babbitt is actually one of the top team players in 3-point percentage. Josh Richardson, good player. I really wonder what they could have done if they were not forced to have to go so much to Waiters, and if Justice Winslow hadn't gotten hurt. You know?
Well, that seems to be the what if, is Justice Winslow is one of the players who had no offensive game and he was getting better. It's just now, what do we sort of, you know, what happens with him? And, you know, the worry with this team is, okay, you picked one, I want to say questionable contract extension in Whiteside, and now it comes up with Waiters. Do you want to give him a ton of money? Because he's not consistent, and I don't think he'll ever be consistent. He has that.
Well, he'll obviously decline his player option at $3 million. That's a no-brainer.
Yeah, he has that irrational J.R. Smith, I'll just take 40 shots, I don't care mentality.
But Miami needed that because they had a hole to fill in that position. They need someone to take shots. So it actually kind of worked out for him. I mean, maybe it's a good fit, and he takes a little bit less than the open market will allow, you know, because he wasn't able to find too many takers when he was a free agent last season, and he had just come off of a team that was really, really good in Oklahoma City. So we'll see there. Offensively, you know, and assist-wise, they got to get better. Goran Dragic being at the lead, it's kind of hard to do that, you know. But we the free agent situation, you can pick up Wayne Ellington's contract at $6.27 million. I think they'll probably do that. Is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah.
No-brainer for Rodney Magruder at $1.3 million. Akoro White, they like him. He's not going anywhere. He seems like a Pat Riley guy. Has Udonis Haslem played his last game with the Miami Heat at age 36?
He should have.
He can get that 37-year-old veteran exemption, though, where you don't have to you can pay him a little bit more and it doesn't hurt your cap, like if they want to keep him.
Yeah, but he provides nothing, and he's just, you know, on the Mike Miller just hobbled train express.
James Johnson, that's the big question here with the free agency along with Waiters.
Yeah, but the thing with James Johnson, he's already 30, so if you sign him to a long deal, he's not going to be good in 3-4 years.
He must have been old when he came out of Wake Forest, because he came out in like 2009. I mean, he must have been like 21, 22 years old. That's crazy. Yeah, I got a feeling, in the back of their mind, the Tyler Johnson, you know, salary increase, that they're going to let Johnson go in free agency. He'll probably find a new home. He seemed to find a home in Miami anyway, but I think he'll find a place to land if he gets overpaid. Kind of a John, I don't want to call it a John Lewis situation, because I think James Johnson is a legit good player, you know, but we'll see.
So what song did you pick?
What for me, I picked this 2009 song from Boys Like Girls called The Great Escape. You know, it's it'd be one of those songs where you have to play it to remember it. But it just seems like every time they like seem to get out of it. They seem to find a way to like make chicken salad out of chicken shit.
So you just go with an obscure song nobody's heard.
Yeah. What did you pick?
I went with Chumbawamba Tub Thumping, because this team just mixes
nobody's ever heard of that song.
You mix a D-League player with a person who's bounced around in the European leagues to, you know, cast off from the city. It just, it's a mishmash. And they played hard, and it was a nice story, and it would have been a different story if they were in the playoffs because they were really hot, but yeah. It's a shame.
Everybody knows the hook of that song. I still don't understand the middle part, like where it's like it's something about a cider drink. Isn't that what he says? Something about...
Yeah.
I don't get that.
A cider drink. It's, you know, hard cider.
Yeah, but what does that have to do with getting knocked down and getting up again?
Because you just drink a ton.
Oh, so the song's about getting shit-faced.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought it was about, like, motivation and, like,
work as apart. Opposed to the bridge being pissing the night away.
Okay, you ready to talk about pissing the night away with the New York Knicks? I told you I'd get you a good segue.
This, we've discussed the Knicks a lot.
Yeah, we got to – I mean, there's a lot to kind of unravel here, but we are a little pressed on time, to be fair.
This deserves their whole – like a, you know, their whole thing on – we'll just put this – I think we could just sort of sum it up as Phil Jackson's the problem.
Okay. He's a train wreck GM.
He's alienated every player on the team. He's thrown everybody under the bus. Stephen A. Smith, I think, was right when they said Jackson should be fined for these comments, because if a player said that – you know,
you're talking about the Carmelo comments where he said he doesn't fit with this team anymore?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that was very out of nowhere. And to the point where Kristaps Porzingis, who I still contest that Porzingis is the Knicks' best player. He's better than Carmelo. I know Melo made the All-Star game because Kevin Love got hurt, but I still think Zinger's the best player.
He will be.
He's
second year. He's developing and... You know, the trades he made was it was extremely high risk, high reward.
Yeah, you know, made a good point about how the Robin Lopez, Derrick Rose deal worked out terribly for the Knicks and very well for the Bulls. That's a good point.
You know, it was either feast or famine with these trades. Joakim Noah has the single-handedly worst contract in the NBA. Everybody knows it.
He also has to sit down, I believe, the first 10 games of the regular season, or is it more than that due to a suspension?
10 or 15.
Yeah.
You hire Hornacek, and then you completely throw him under the bus saying he's not teaching the triangle.
And then you bring in Kurt Rambis to teach defense.
Yeah, and then the players are like, we don't like it, we don't understand it. No, trust me, you like it. And you know, the old guard is so over right now. The NBA has changed really fast over the past 2 years. The triangle can't work if you play small ball.
Yeah, I mean, the triangle does not work because it all revolves around, you know, building up the strong side of the court. But you can't do that because you have to stretch him out symmetrically for three-point shooting. Like, it's harder to get open three-point shooters if you're just overpopulating one side of the court. You can't do the spacing doesn't work, you know, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, the spacing doesn't work if everybody shoots threes now.
There you go. I mean, and he hasn't really gotten that yet. Like, Rose seemed to be playing well at the start of the season, or maybe like in the month of December, kind of slowed down, and then he tore his meniscus again in April. I don't even know if he's going to be back, to be honest with you.
I don't know either. It's just after Christmas, this team just went south completely, so... You know, not that we're skipping over them, but we've both isolated the problem. We like Porzingis. At the same time, Phil Jackson, the scout, Kuzmiskas seems like a nice player.
Ron Baker's a nice player.
A nice player, undrafted. Hernan Gomez seems to be a nice player. So yeah. He has this nice development core coming. But you try to put this pat in his Band-Aid for, oh, we can make a playoff run. Well, you can make a play, but if this team were at its best, could you have beaten Cleveland? No. Could you have been the top two or three? No.
Their free agency is kind of weird because you got Rose. They already cut Brandon Jennings. He's playing for Washington in the playoffs right now. The other one is the other part of the Bulls trade from last summer, and that was Justin Holiday. He did average 7 points and almost 3 rebounds a game. Like, do you expect them to keep Holiday? Do you think he'll stay for less? Like, where do you think that's going to go?
I thought it was a team option.
I have it under here as an unrestricted free agent, but you might be correct. You know, so we'll see.
Okay, well, they, you know, it's having bench players aren't the issue, and they'll pay him. It's just the problem is you have, you know, Courtney Lee doesn't fit on this team. Yes, he's, shooting at 40%, but they couldn't get rid of him and get something good in return for him.
It's a tradable contract at $11 million. It's actually a good deal. Like, in terms of salary, it's not a killer.
Yeah, for teams that need shooting, he mm-hmm. can provide. He's just not going to move the needle on this team. And if you want to sort of hit this reset button, you could do it. You could do it kind of quick.
Yeah.
Because you, in order to get rid of Melo, you'll have to take in pennies on the dollar.
And that's the question I was going to ask you. Is Carmelo Anthony going to be a Knick by the time we get to training camp?
I would think he, in between, you know, given between Jackson and Melo, I'd go with Melo over Jackson. And maybe if you get a coach in who, you know, wants to, go to player strengths as opposed to, well, you have to play the system.
I would reluctantly say yes, because I do think Melo being moved is sort of a necessary evil to get better.
Melo needs to move, and it's just one of those things, if you just tell him, you know, it's one of those, like, let's say you trade him to Philly, that would be, you know, you have your own up-and-coming franchise, you are the face of the team, you don't need to carry everything, and then it puts him into the, you know, a playoff picture and leaps him up 10 spots.
I still think they can be a playoff team, but only if they truly turn it over to Porzingis. I think that's the only way. Like, if they can build it around him.
People around him. You can't, if you turn over to Porzingis, you get rid of Melo, and let's say it is the J.J. Redick, Austin Rivers trade. Yeah, that team is far worse than it is with just Melo.
Yes, but maybe a little bit more team fusion, not as much jaggedness. But then again, it's Phil Jackson still running the team, and you got all that James Dolan stuff. You know, that's always going to be hovering over your head. Okay, I'm done talking about the Knicks. Let's talk about the Orlando Magic, who somehow had a just as miserable season as the Knicks did, you know?
It's now we're just getting to the sadness part of this.
Okay. 29-53, 16-25 at home, 13-28 on the road. We thought they would try to get a little bit better with Frank Vogel, who had been fired in Indiana. We felt unfairly to coach the Magic. But they did re-sign Evan Fournier, which worked out well. But it didn't really the Serge Ibaka deal was where they traded Oladipo for Ibaka. We weren't sure how that was going to work with him and Bismack Biyombo, another free agent signing. It didn't really work out at all. It seemed like Ibaka was kind of playing at half speed. They traded him to Orlando in exchange for Terrence Ross, which made some people upset because they felt like they traded away Oladipo for Terrence Ross by proxy.
And that's what the apologists will say. Well, you can't compare them both. Well, you sort of have to if that's what happens. If A leads to C, A leads to B, leads to C, well, you can't help but compare the two.
More questionable signings last summer by Rob Hennigan. In hindsight, trying to play Jody Meeks instead of just dumping him. Signing Jeff Green to a one-year $15 million contract and signing DJ Augustin, for like a four-year or three-year, $21 million contract just made no sense to anybody.
See, I am not against that. Signing him to a one-year deal is the same thing essentially the Celtics did with Amir Johnson.
I'm talking about Augustin.
Augustin was – that's the question mark. Green was just the – if we need a cap money, well, here's our cap trade. If we need to dump him, we don't have to, stretch provision. He's just going to sit there for 1 year. I think the time has passed for the Jeff Green reclamation project of maybe he'll be good on our team and maybe he could turn around.
And that's the problem, that he didn't pass the smell test. Like, there was nobody who was going to say, oh, we'll take this contract because it's tradable. Like, no one was going to do that for Jeff Green. They'd already seen enough of him. You want to give that contract to somebody who's a little bit younger, like maybe, I hate to say this, like a Kyle O'Quinn, like somebody who could actually provide for you if you're desperate.
At the same time, we saw all these negatives. Evan Fournier came back on a discount, and mm-hmm. he played really well.
Yeah, they got him at $17 million a year to start on his new contract. So
he might be the only good thing they have going for him. And the problem is they played better once they played small ball. And if you go into the season saying we're going to be the biggest team, we're going to be the biggest defensive team, we're going to outgrind Memphis, it's not a good sign when the best thing came is when you did literally the exact opposite.
Their team stats are not even worth glossing over. They were bottom five in almost everything, three-pointers made, field goal percentage, defense and offense. It was just the drizzling shits across the board. Here's the real question here, and it's between three guys that we didn't mention yet. Elfrid Payton, Terrence Ross, who they got in the Serge Ibaka trade in the midseason, and Aaron Gordon. Now, which one really fits the best? Because like, it feels like they're going to try to make it work with Terrence Ross. He's going to be there until 2019 under contract. But Elfrid Payton is the interesting one because of the fact that he's not really a good point guard, but he does get triple-doubles, you know, even though everyone and their grandmother gets triple-doubles.
Well, the first thing, you know, Hennigan did sort of say what we said is, and just after watching him in Oklahoma City, Oladipo wasn't the franchise player. He sort of had, is going to be the, he gave you what he gave you. He gives you good numbers, but he's not going to be that superstar.
Mm-hmm.
And for somebody who was picked with the second pick, you kind of need that. Payton is just going to be one of those, he's just one of those, I get tons of numbers because I'm on a super bad team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't make the team better. I just get points. I don't shoot well, but I'm going to still keep shooting it. I'm not the best passer, but I'm still going to just try to fit it in. Gordon, he might be the new Jeff Green in a few years because it's sort of the, well, this was the first year he was finally able to play the four because he's been playing out of position every year. Well, how many years can we just take this? Well, he has the potential. He has athleticism, but he doesn't know what to do.
Gordon is such a good athlete, though. That's a big part of it. Like you feel like you could fit him at the three or the four, and that's why there's this conundrum in Orlando of, well, which way we're playing. Well, clearly you should be playing him at the four and run him on a lot of pick and roll. You know, that's really what you should do, but that's not what Orlando did.
Yeah, and
you're stuck with Biombo. You can't really move. Like, maybe you can move that contract, but it's at $17 million a year. That's going to be really tough. But maybe they can just settle with Biombo at the as the backup five behind Vucevic, who's a true five.
And they relegated Vucevic to the bench for some unknown reason.
Mm-hmm. And then Hezonja was just a flop of a contract, of a draft pick. I mean, let's just admit it.
I'm not ready to give up on him.
Oh, my God. You're not ready to give up on Mario Hezonja. Are you kidding me?
He doesn't have a, you know, he played sort of better when he played sort of a three. And it's one of those, well, rookie year, you never got a chance. And you bring in this whole new system. And I still say you can't flop out on one team. He needs to flop out elsewhere.
If you're Orlando, who do you move between, like, Payton, Ross, Gordon, Biombo even? Like, who do you move?
Well, Biombo has nothing. I would move Payton because
But the ownership loves him.
No, Hennigan was the one who loved him.
Okay. Well, it depends. Well, we'll find out very soon because when the new GM comes. Have they signed a new GM officially yet?
No, they just have a short list. And, you know, they played better with him on the, you know, he got a lot of numbers when he wasn't even starting.
Uh-huh.
So that's sort of the problem is, you know, Hennigan thought he's the, you know, star franchise. We need to max him out. And he's not that player. And they don't have an identity. They don't have anything. They just have Evan Fournier, who signed for less and has been a good player.
Yeah, at 17 points per game. Vucevic is still a double-double guy. I wouldn't let him go for anything. I don't think Gordon's a trade. I think Gordon is untouchable. Now, we have to talk about the Patricio Garano Instagram whiteboard. Like, we have to mention that, even though it's all kind of like scrap heap now because Hennigan, who was like planning all that strategy on that whiteboard that was caught on the photo, he's been fired anyway. But what do you think of like maybe trading? He had an idea of trading AG, which is Aaron Gordon, for Dario Saric. Like, I mean, there was a couple of them up there that would kind of made you laugh. But what do you think? How much of the game plan is going to change now that Hennigan's gone? Is it like a total overhaul, or do they have to sort of keep some of the pieces in place here?
Oh, most likely be a total overhaul. It's just the Saric deal would have made neither team better. Mm-hmm. That was the funny thing is I don't see how Philly would benefit from that. I don't see how Orlando would benefit for that. It's just, you know, and the same thing. Like, how about Tobias Harris? It's like, well, you literally got rid of him.
Yes.
Because he was –
You signed them to the contract that he is under. So that just made no sense.
And then dumped him for people who aren't on your team and then like, well, let's put him back on. And, you know, or they had a lot of high hopes once they lost Dwight Howard. They had a lot of draft picks coming in. They had a lot of young players, and they just squandered every one.
They got Vucevic out of it, but that was about it.
is they just kept hitting the reset button too many times.
Yeah. I mean, I think Bill Simmons has said this on the show before, on his show before, and he makes a good point, is that it's real, even when you trade, a star player, even if you get like draft picks and assets aplenty, you're still going to get maybe at the best 70 cents on the dollar. Like even Denver, when they traded Carmelo to New York, how many stars did they truly get out of the deal? Not that many. Like they didn't get like the game changer that Melo was. So you still, at the end of the day, didn't get as much as you wanted. You know, it's hard to make on a trade when you trade away a prime, in his prime superstar.
And the same thing, you trade a prime superstar away for picks, they're not going to develop for 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
How many LeBrons have come along where year one they're dominant, already scoring 20 points? No, it takes, you know, we mentioned Anthony Towns, who might be the closest thing, and he still has room for improvement 2 years, you know, he's only 2 years in. You're not going to replace superstar for superstar. It takes time, and you have to move other pieces to that.
Yeah, so, and that's the other downside of having multiple assets, because it's like we see this now with Boston, is this idea of, oh, well, we have these other ones in our back pocket. If we miss on this one, it's okay. No, it's not okay, because that might be the pick that messes up the whole deal. You got to get it right, not just once out of three times. You have to get it right every time. And Orlando with the Dwight Howard deal is a perfect example of that.
Exactly. So what music did you pick?
I actually am going to, mine was like more of the, cause you had more of like the older song. So I went with the more contemporary, and I went One Less Problem by Ariana Grande, where Rob Hennigan is the One Less Problem without you.
My mind was just super dark, and I wanted to get rid of it. You're like, no, no, you have to keep it. So
yeah,
I went with Ben Folds, Brick.
Yeah, well, are they Ben Folds or Ben Folds 5?
I don't know what part of it, whether it was his solo, it might still be the 5.
Yeah,
but that's just the Orlando fans deserve better, and it's been 5 years now, Hennigan's
Ben Folds, you know, 5. He's exactly.
they've gotten worse every year, and this was supposed to be the year they were ready to make the contention, and they just regressed again. And it's just, the fans deserve better, because there's, you know, who's your superstar? Who do you build around?
Who wants to go there? I mean, that's the thing. They were at a point where they had to overpay just to bring in Jeff freaking Green. You know what I'm saying? It's just, man, like, you don't want to do, but here's the thing. At least they didn't do what the Lakers did with Mozgov and Deng. You didn't just overpay and give extra years to guys just because you wanted to, you needed to overpay to convince them to go there. At least Orlando didn't do that. They didn't tie up money on guys that they didn't need just because they had the cap space. Like, don't waste it. You still have time to make it work.
Moving on to teams who don't want to tie up money to anything.
And that would be the Philadelphia 76ers.
We've mentioned this team ad nauseum, so.
Well, everyone does. Like, they are the bee's knees. Anytime it's draft time, that's like Philly's Super Bowl. Like, that's their, that, like, it's like for the Cleveland Browns. It's like their Kevin Costner draft day, you know?
So I will just sort of sum this up with a couple quick points, because we've really gone into depth with this team. Like, seems like every other week.
Yeah.
The process is going to always be, what was the end game with it?
I think the end game with it was that by tanking as many years as possible, that sooner or later you were going to get the one transcendent star that was going to make your team great. And we haven't seen it yet because of Embiid's injury. We saw flashes of it in his rookie year, finally. And then Ben Simmons didn't play at all. So we're still not sure.
But I understand that, but why do you draft 4 bigs in 3 years?
Because that was the best available player, according to their evaluation.
But that's the thing is, we've seen, remember Atlanta did that in the 2000s, and the Clippers did that. You draft the best player, so you're just, they can't play together, so their value can't go up. Your process started with Nerlens Noel. You trade him for 2 second-rounders. You have Jahlil Okafor, who people don't think is going to be good. Period. There's people ready to write him off as a bust.
Yeah, they didn't do it the Sam Presti way, where Presti got, well, I don't want to say Presti got lucky, but he did make the right picks, where he got a small forward, then he got, or a power forward, depending on what you think of Durant. Then he got a point guard. Then you got a shooting guard. You got guys that they could all play on the court at the same time. You know,
and that's the thing, is you have all these things, you know, then Embiid, then Saric, he's a four. So, and then Simmons, well, he'll be our point three. Okay, so what happens when other teams go small? These guys can't, you know, they're going to be running around the court a lot. It's just one of the, where was the end game for this if you're drafting assets that you can't flip?
Can you buy into the notion that they're one of the only teams that can play big boy ball if they have a fully healthy Embiid, Simmons, Saric, even an Okafor, and you can go big, kind of like Memphis used to, and that might be a good counter strategy to the small ball?
No, because all it takes is just a Houston, just I'm just going to run down the court and shoot a three in 5 seconds.
Yeah.
That negates everything. It's just quick shooting. So that I don't get.
Now, they did also take a lot of threes, but you can keep going.
Also, you know, remember Hinkie said the process was going to start is going to take 5 years.
Uh-huh.
We're now in year five, and they are nowhere near starting where their plan is.
But they can always say that the injuries to Embiid and Simmons delayed it by another year or two. That would be the excuse.
And that's the problem, is now you're just relying on excuses. Also, you know, the new money thing, it's gonna hurt them, because you're going to have to max out Embiid. If you have all these, you know, you think Simmons is that good, you're going to have to max him out.
Well, here's the problem with Embiid, just to cut you off, that you have to max him out in that case in 2018, because he already played out 2 years of his contract.
Exactly.
Without playing a game. So it's even hurried up even more. Yep.
We've seen money just disappear really fast. And you're not going to have all these players on rookie contracts forever.
Yeah. And did you hear the report that they actually brought down the cap figures? I think it's $2 million less than they thought it would be. So now you're going to see even tighter wads of money this summer.
And just another thing, how the new money screwed everybody. Sacramento, I did the math. It saved them $16 million to do all these trades.
You're talking about the one with Philadelphia where they traded away Landry and
they had 2 years left on Landry. Mm-hmm. Philly just stretch provisioned him. They had another year on Thompson. They were both making $6 million, and then you had Stauskas with his money, and he couldn't even. He still hasn't succeeded well in Philly, where this was his perfect chance of, well, you just go out and shoot. We need a shooter. We don't have a shooter. Go do it. He can't do it.
Well, the risk there still is, like always with Philadelphia, it's tied in the future. Is that if Sacramento winds up worse than Philadelphia, Philadelphia can do what Boston did with Brooklyn and just swap the picks, and Sacramento's screwed. But you have to trust. Here's the problem, though. You have to trust Jerry Colangelo and Brett Brown, the head coach, who we're still not sold on yet, to make them better within the next 2 years. That's the problem.
And also, that's you brought up a very interesting point, is how come you have Miami? How come you have, let's say, you know, Dallas with Yogi Ferrell? You have my favorite Sean Kilpatrick in Brooklyn. Where were all these, you know, they were just getting 10-day guys left and right. How come none of these undrafted bums haven't done anything in Philly, really?
Yeah,
they're sort of all interchangeable.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think talent evaluation has been bad for them. I even think their talent evaluation, when they finally were able to pull off free agency, was not great. Like Jared Bayless, he got hurt with the knee 3 games in. You can't really blame him there. Gerald Henderson, we knew in Charlotte and in Portland, he really wasn't a difference maker. So when they signed him, I was just like, that wasn't very inspired. You know,
yeah, Sergio Rodriguez,
Tiago Splitter did nothing. You know, they picked him up and he did nothing. You got
well, that's just for cap money.
The only one that worked out was actually a draft pick, and that was Timothy Luwawu Cabarrot. You know, that's
Luwawu, and you had Robert Covington, who's played well.
McConnell's probably the only undrafted free agent that actually kind of worked out for them.
But they're not, you know, they're okay. But how come? how come Miami's D-League team is putting people onto the Heat, being contributors on the Heat?
Yeah, compared to the 87ers. Yeah, who never...
The 87ers are just, they're not really doing anything, and that's, you know, sort of the question mark. So let's just, you know, we've talked about Philly enough. Yeah. What song do you have for
that? For me, I have I Don't Want to Wait by Paula Cole, one of my favorite songs. It's the theme song from Dawson's Creek. I feel like there is a point now, like you said, with the year five scenario, with the five-year plan, that there is going to be a day of reckoning with Philadelphia, where the fans are just going to get incredibly restless by 2018 and say, look, we have got to find results, or we're just going to have to cut everybody loose, you know?
And what was that Adam Sandler movie? Was it... It wasn't Mr. Deeds. Remember, he was dating probably Drew Barrymore, and she dumped him for somebody, like a professor who was on a five-year plan.
50...
And it turned out the five...
50 First Dates?
No. Because the five-year plan was he was working at Hooters at the end. I was like, that was your five-year plan?
Uh-huh.
Well, he's in college. He has a five-year plan. I forget which...
Not the wedding singer, huh?
No, it was. They might have been Big Daddy. Or...
How many movies did Drew Barrymore and Adam Sandler make together?
A lot.
Oh, my God. I just named two of them, and neither was the one that you're thinking of. Anybody for Place to Be Nation who can tweet it back to me, just let me know what the movie was. Because I can't... I mean, Adam Sandler's got that Netflix deal, so now he's chugging out movies I've never even heard of. So... Is it the movie where him and Drew Barrymore have like a bunch of kids? Is that the one that you're talking about?
Big Daddy. It was.
Oh,
Big
yeah,
Daddy.
Big Daddy is not Drew Barrymore. Big Daddy is.
I said probably Drew Barrymore.
Probably Drew Barrymore. Yeah, I remember Big Daddy was a big hit. But yeah, the 5-year plan, you're just not big on that anymore, huh?
It's a 5-year plan, and then your problem with your 5-year plan is other teams have tanked too. So, well, we'll draft this superstar, and then we could do this and we could do that. Well, you also have other people who are just as hungry now.
Yeah.
And that basement has just, you know, have a lot more teams than it did before. So you're no longer the, well, we'll take your picks for money. We'll take, you have, you know, Orlando's, we'll take your picks for money. Brooklyn, we'll take your picks for money. You're not the only, you know, stop on the line right now.
To finish up, do you think that – because we talked about how good the top of the lottery is going to be this year. Do you think they could find the guy, probably a point guard, whether it be Fultz or Ball? Like, do you think – unless they go to number three and they're not able to, you know, get that pick. Do you think they can find that guy this time? Or do you think it's Simmons still?
You have – you know, let's say you get Fultz or Ball. Okay, now what happened to Simmons as your point guard? Now he's just he's now your three.
Your stretch four. Well, not really a stretch four because he doesn't take threes. So it's, you know,
he can't be a stretch four because you have Saric and Embiid, and you still have no shooter. Like, it's not you're not going to fix it all this year. And even let's say you know, they have two of the top four. You get Jackson. Well, now you have young players who still aren't good together.
Yeah,
and you never see it's only in video games where you have rookies who just somehow, well, now we're in the playoff hunt. No, they always get destroyed because they don't know how to play and they don't know how to win and pace themselves.
Yes. So let's go ahead and just try to rank these teams based on like how we feel about them going forward. We'll go from worst to best. So you give me your worst one.
As far as future?
Yeah, as far as going towards next season.
Orlando
would be last. I would actually, as I look at it, I would still put the Nets last. I'd still put the Nets last.
I have them. The Nets would be above them.
I have the Knicks second to last, behind the Nets, or right in front of the Nets. To be fair, what do you have for the next one?
Then I would have the Knicks.
The Knicks. Okay, I'll say the Magic back. And so just same three there, just different mix.
Then Philly.
Philly, you would be fighting between like Charlotte, Detroit, Miami, and Philly. That's fair. I'd say the Sixers too. I agree with that one.
And now, you know, Charlotte and Detroit, they're both teams that are capable of being in the playoffs.
I like the Hornets more because they already have an all-star. I don't know if Andre Drummond can be an all-star now. I say Pistons and then Charlotte and then Miami.
Miami's just not, you know, there's always that one team. It's like, well, you had to be in this group, but you don't
Well, they have Whiteside, and they end Dragic still has a year or two on his deal. Like, and they have a really good coach.
They have,
You know, they're smart. It's a smart team. Like, I can tell Miami is run by smart people. I also think Charlotte is run by, you know, I know people criticize Michael Jordan as an owner, but I think Charlotte is a pretty well run team. The other teams, they look like morons sometimes. Now the Nets are picking up the pieces, so we don't know yet. You know.
Well, they're just rebuilding them, but they're expected they have a future. You have, you know, it comes down to this. The common theme is, with the exception of the, you know, Philly and Brooklyn, all these teams made questionable signings.
Mm-hmm.
Miami's excluded because they're above this. Everybody made bad signings, and this is why they're at the bottom where they are.
Yeah, and here's the truth, too, with Dwayne Wade. Miami probably made the right move at the end of the day. Like, look at Dwayne Wade now, you know?
Well, they had to. And also, well, had he stayed in Miami, that team would be completely different. They wouldn't have Tyler Johnson. They wouldn't have Deion Waiters. Their chemistry would be different. It would be a different
team.
You know, it wouldn't be this what we saw.
Yeah, it looked like they were holding on anyway. Like, didn't that team last year have also Joe Johnson? I'm missing another guy that they had from that playoff team when they lost to the Raptors in 7. But it was like a very like experienced team. Like
Chris Anderson.
Yeah, it was like a team that was built around what Dwayne Wade could help them with. You know, and when he left, it was like, well, it's not a rebuild, but we do have to find a way to focus around Whiteside and Dragic. And it worked out for them. So you have Heat. This is best of worst. Heat, Pistons, Hornets, Sixers, Knicks, Nets, Magic. I have Heats, Hornets, Pistons, Sixers, Magic, Knicks, and Nets.
Sounds good.
As you hear, we're getting played off the air here to finish up this one. Are you looking forward to our playoff preview next week as we get into the conference finals?
Well, as we said, not shockingly, Golden State and Cleveland easily.
But we'll have some more to talk about as we get to there. On behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Take care, guys. We'll see you next week.